Hello, my name is Peter Cinnamon, and you're very welcome to this, a podcast all about the Irish League. August is almost in the books, and it's back to school season once again for a few. Unfortunately, some of these Irish League teams are going to have to retake a couple of classes if they think they're going to achieve top grades next summer. Defending a lead, that'll be high on Linfield's homework chart this week. Nobody seems to have paid attention in the class where we covered how to stop Dungannon coming back late. And Crusaders, well, they look like they're a shoo-in for head boy if they keep this current act up. Northern Ireland have a brand new squad out, Carrick Rangers have a fresh investor, and Coleraine looks as though they've finally said I do to a couple of money men. We've got plenty to cover, so let's get started on this week's Kicking Match. We're five games in, and it is amazing how early in the season we look at the table and we still already have our, what I'm going to describe this season as our established top six and our less so established bottom six. With that, there's still not a massive gap, but there's still plenty to be played. And to go through all the news, all the games this week is someone that I've been badgering to get on since the end of last season, and I've finally got them, ladies and gentlemen. It is a debut, and it is a delight for me to welcome on to the podcast. Make some noise in your kitchen, living room, car, place of work. For journalist and football writer, Stuart McKinley. Hello, Stuart.
Hi, Peter. I didn't realise it was that hard to get, but I'm delighted to be making my debut with you.
Look, mate, schedules have to come together. You know, you're a busy man. I'm trying to get the best football writers around to come on and chat with me. You are one of them. Five games in. Now, you cover a lot of different games, a lot of different teams. So far, I know it's early days in the season. How are you finding Irish League football 2023-2024? Is it treating you well?
Yeah. My homes this season are Glenavon and Loch Gall, and I've seen some really good football played. Seen some disappointing performances, as teams and managers would admit to. But everyone's saying that the league's getting better, and I think five games into this season, it's amazing that there's been a step up even in that short space of time, and the short space of time there's been from the end of last season. I think the quality has been really, really good in a lot of the games I've seen.
It's funny, it's only been a few weeks, but it feels like a lot has happened already. A part of that obviously is the fact that we have six really good teams that are not always creating the most entertaining fixtures, but they're creating games that have a lot on the line. And as you said, you are somewhat of the expert. You've got a keener eye on the Mid-Ulster sides more than anyone, particularly with Glenavon and Loch Gall. And that's where I'm going to start. We're going to take ourselves back to Friday night, to Lakeview Park, where Glenavon go into the game with 0 points against a Loch Gall team who, in some big moments, have stepped up and have got a couple of points on the board already. We go into halftime there, 2-0 up to the good, to the home side. Take us back to that moment, because I remember looking from afar and seeing 2-0 Loch Gall after the way, and I'd seen Glenavon the week before, and we had talked about it in the podcast last week. If that had stayed the way it was, and it didn't, that was going to be 9 points to Loch Gall. I was there at that game with you where Newry beat Glenavon, and there was boos from the home supporters on that afternoon. The pressure on Gary Hamilton going in to that dressing room must have felt immense.
I joked with you at half time saying if anyone can make that first half sound interesting, it was you. Because that was going to be a difficult task. And until Newry scored, it was a really, really poor game. And Gary is always very honest, open, and his reading of a football game is very, very good when you speak to him. And he was open enough and honest enough to admit how poor Glenavon were that day. There was no point in him trying to gloss it over or paper over any cracks, because he would have just got criticised for it. If you've seen that game, and if you see the halftime score last Friday night against Loch Gall, you're thinking, well, obviously that's just carried on from last Saturday, but it wasn't quite like that. I thought Glenavon played a lot more football in the first half of that game at Loch Gall than they did against Newry, without creating a massive amount, without putting a lot on the goalkeeper. But they looked like they had something that might help them open up. And then Lockall hit them with two goals. And then, as we've all seen, sometimes a substitute comes on and just turns the game. And when you look at the free kick that Conor McCluskey scored the first goal from, a lot of people are probably thinking, what's he shooting from there for?
Well, that's what I was thinking. It's a slight deviation from the game at hand, but it is one of the, it has to be one of the most Irish League behaviour moments I've ever seen. It will go down as a moment that will somewhat define or be remembered very strongly. You were at the game. I saw it was delayed 15 minutes. To tell the story, who discovered that the posts were too low? And then how on earth did they get someone so quickly from around the village to go, does anybody have a forklift? To be honest, if someone asked me before Friday night, how do you just quickly raise the posts? A forklift was not going to be the first thing that I would go to, and then that would do the trick there and then.
I didn't know until I got into the ground what had happened, and then it was explained to me. And yeah, you think, goodness me, how quickly can an Irish League club get a hold of a forklift truck? And yeah, how else do you raise crossbars? So well done to whoever figured out that there was a quite a quick solution, and that the game was only delayed 15 minutes. You think that game could have been scrapped altogether. My understanding of the situation is that it was Gary Hamilton himself who raised the issue, because Gary, I don't know if he routinely checks these things, but I think if Gary stands up and puts his hand up, he can touch a crossbar, or can't touch a crossbar. But he was able to touch the crossbar at Lakeview Park, and he raised this with the officials, who then checked it themselves. And I think we've all seen the footage of someone out with a measuring tape.
It's just like I've been at Shamrock Park for when they're blowtorching the pitch, but the forklift is going to be an image which will live long. And yes, as you said, could that extra whatever it was, inch and a half, I don't know how tall it was supposed to be, could that have been the difference? We don't know. But the man that did make the difference was Conor McCluskey. He stepped up big for his manager and really got him out of a hole. 2-2 is how it ended. Was that a fair result across the 90 minutes, would you say?
It probably was, yes, because, well, Lockall did hit the woodwork themselves second half. Rory Brown made a good save, but Glenavon did have pressure after the second goal. And I remember asking Gary after the Newry game, or just talking and saying about how his defensive injuries were actually impacting them going forward, because Peter Campbell was having to play as a wing back or emergency left back. Peter Campbell is so effective for Glenavon at the other end of the pitch. So he played Aaron Rodgers at left back against Loughall, and suddenly Peter Campbell is having this impact that we all know he can have, and he is massive in that equalising goal. The cross he put in would have scared any defence. Just having to take a slight deflection off one of the defender's backs. Tucker did the best he could to get a hand to it, try and deflect it away, and then it's put back across the goal. Conor McCluskey standing all alone at the back post. Couldn't have missed, and probably couldn't get more of a contrast between the two goals that he scored as well.
How much does this help Gary Hamilton and his position? There was discontent among the fans up until Friday without a point. He's now got a point. They've had a lot of difficult fixtures if you look at it. For them, he's calling out for a striker. He said it's been one of the most difficult times, his decade plus time as a manager, to get any kind of recruitment in. We've talked about a lot how they lose Matthew Fitzpatrick, who was such a key cog in that team. Clearly, if you look at it, you'll see that you talk about those defensive issues. They were without Wallace for a long time during pre-season. They've had to play players like Isaac Bird at the back, but that doesn't matter. It's about what you do on the pitch. Do you think he was under pressure going into that game? And do you think he still is under pressure from his fans and from his board?
I think if you don't pick up a point in the first four games of the season, no matter who you are, you're going to be under pressure. Gary does have the support of his chairman and Adrian Tier. How wide the support is across the board, and I mean the board specifically, and then I'm not 100% sure, but it's now up to the players. If they can show that character in that second half performance to come back and get a point, then at least Gary knows he's got something there within that squad that can maybe go in the weekend against Ballymena. If they get a win there, then it only takes a couple of results to start to get a bit of momentum rolling. If he can get his injuries back in the back four, if the new striker, Colin, as I think we're just all going to call him.
I'm going to go Oppong. Okay. Oppong. 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 Yes, but he comes in. 21-year-old comes in from Salford City, I believe. They've been crying out for a striker. He could hopefully be a thing for Gary and Glenavon fans. Could be the man that could help fill a bit of a void that they have there.
Well, the Glenavon guys were all just calling him Colin the other night. So we'll just stick with Colin. Yeah, if he gets in to the team on Saturday and nicks a goal, all of a sudden then he's hitting the ground runner. And that's what you want in any striker that signs. You know, get him a goal early on and then gives him confidence, gives the fans a bit of confidence in him as well. I think the players that Glenavon have, they've enough there that can be turned around. But when you take out a player like Michael O'Connor, class player, always had time on the ball, clever, and then you lose your top goal scorer. No manager in the world wants to lose his top goal scorer, unless maybe you're Ange Postecoglou, who seems to have done quite well since Harry Kane's gone. You take goals out of a team, you need to then replace them, which they haven't quite done.
Of course, we were having similar conversations in regards to frustration from fans and going on a bad run earlier on this calendar year, and Gary was able to turn that completely around, secure seventh. He was able to go on this really great run to end the season, where I think they were undefeated in the guts of at least 5-6 games. So he will feel very resolute that he has 100% earned any kind of patch that isn't exactly perfect. He will point to players coming back, injuries, and it was a big moment, a big team talk that he clearly delivered on Friday night to get that result. And he goes now into this game on Saturday, which is another one of these huge games. Two teams who were languishing at the bottom with 0 points each this time last week. Glenavon have got one, but for Jim Irvine and Ballymena, they'll be sitting there, probably have been sitting there for a while, with this fixture at Moorview Park circled in red. They clearly didn't want to go through that gauntlet and get 0 points against the five teams at the play that were all top six last season, but it has happened. They now go to Moorview Park, where it is a 6-pointer and then some. Somebody will come out of it. If it's a draw, so what? But there's a lot on the line in that game when it comes to end of season permutations.
There could well be. It's early in the season to be thinking like that, but naturally when you look at the table, that's the way you start to think. To put the Glenavon's early calendar year into context, can't exactly remember who they played, but I remember going to the game one night and Gary had 10 fit outfield players and Mark Matthews in goal making his league debut. Gary names himself on the bench because the rest are teenagers. That's the context of the run that they were going through at that time when they had so many injuries.
I remember that.
Suspensions. And then when he got his players back, they did have that run at the end of the season. So that's why I think it could be turned around. Ballymena, and I've looked at a lot of the games so far have been top six against bottom six. And I think it's only now we're getting into this sort of second half of this first round of matches that it's the teams in the top six are playing each other. And we've just had Cliftonville play, that rearranged game against Olympia was to be the first game, but they've just played Lorne and then they play Glenshorn. So we're going to have those games, top six playing each other, bottom six playing each other now. When, yes, you did say at the start there about how the top six and bottom six has already emerged the same as it has been for a while. But now when the bottom six are playing each other and Ballymena maybe have a run of fixtures where they're looking at picking up some points here, that's when we'll see really what they've got and what he's got in his squad. Difficult as a rookie manager walking in there when the confidence has maybe been a bit low in at Ballymena.
They're running, Ballymena's running at the start of the season somewhat reminded me of what I think Portadown went through last year. We all know how that ended for the Ports, but I think they played pretty much all the top six in their opening games. I don't think they barely scored a goal yet were able to get any points from that. Ballymena have 5 out of the 6. I think Cliftonville's the one that they didn't get on their bingo ticket. The recent result being Glentoran coming to town on Friday night. And similarly, what we've seen in other games against the top sides is that Ballymena look strong, look resolute, are able to hold on for a while. Then eventually the deadlock's broken and they just aren't able to chase down and snatch a goal. And then somewhere in the middle, it's a red card. That's very much been what these games have looked like. It's a good result for Glenavon. It's one of those games where it's a great result for Glentoran. It's one of those results where they need to do if they're having a league charge. But one thing that stood out to me from that game is that perhaps a player who's been a bit quiet to start the season, both on the goals front and impacting games, Jed Donnelly, looks as though he's starting to find his rhythm this season, and he took his goal well.
Warren did say in the first game of the season when Jay scored that 99th minute winner that he could be the best striker in the league, and then he basically said the same thing again on Friday night. Strikers don't have to play well. Strikers don't have to have good games. They just need to score when the chances come. If he's scoring a winning goal or an important goal, 2-0, you know, when it's 1-0, anything can happen. We say 2-0 is the worst lead, but I'd certainly rather have a 2-0 lead than a 1-0 lead. So if he's just chipping in goals and 1-0 wins, 2-0 wins, that's good. You know, he doesn't have to be man of the match. As long as he's putting the ball in the net, that's his job.
We're talking about this team in the context that we haven't seen the full result. It's currently being played, that game at the Oval between Glentoran and Crusaders. We'll reflect a lot of our thoughts moving forward off the back of that result. But for Glentoran, it's funny. They come in not really firing on all cylinders, but they've broadly got a couple of great results. They're up there, they're still in the mix, clear this part of the season. When you look at that Glentoran team from 1 to 11, I think a lot of people have discounted them in regards to the title challenge just because of their reputation for shooting themselves in the foot. But if they can keep up the momentum and get big wins potentially against Crusaders and others, they really could keep themselves up near the top. Like, it is a very impressive squad they've assembled.
Everywhere you're looking at Glentoran squad, there's quality. First game of the season against Glenavon, I looked at the midfield. You've got Fuad Sule, league title winner last season with Larne. There's a good reason why they signed him. Bobby Burns, who was Glentoran's player of the year, I think player of the year by quite a distance as well. And Cammy Palmer started that game in three in midfield. And he's a player that I've rated since first day I ever saw him. That midfield alone is quality. The one thing that surprised me that day was that he didn't really play through the midfield. Fuad Sule's strength at Larne was coming and taking the ball off the back four and then from there. But a lot of what Glentoran were doing, both at Glenavon and then when I saw them later at Loch Awe, was a lot of long balls going out the right wing towards Darragh O'Connor. Now, that might be just Warren Feeney coming in and going, right, let's do this, get his points on the board, let's get some wins early on, and this is the way we'll have to do it. And maybe the stylish football will evolve later on through those players that we've talked about. And then like a Shea McCartan, who top quality player in this league, there's a reason why Glentoran paid such a big fee for him. So that should still come with Glentoran because they have that quality.
Glentoran, on Friday, they get their business done. They do the business against Ballymena down at the Showgrounds. A fan base who really thought their team should have and wanted them to do just that was Linfield, the Blues, at home at Windsor Park, to Carrick Rangers. A Carrick Rangers who were coming off a thumping to Crusaders. 9-0, a scoreline we will talk a lot about, I imagine, as the season goes on. We'll keep talking about that. They go into Windsor Park. They take a brilliant lead. Linfield calm themselves down. They crawl back in front. They once again let Carrick in again. And you think when it's 3-2 to Linfield, they've weathered the storm. They never really looked the better side on Saturday. But if you are to avoid slipping down or avoid not falling away from your rivals, this is the type of game that you need to see out. Scoring goals hasn't really been a massive problem, as much as it's under the spotlight constantly with Linfield. Scoring goals hasn't been a huge problem. Chris McKee has really stepped up in that regard. But conceding them has just been an issue from the summer onwards. I tweeted out there on Saturday that when you combine the teams below them on Saturday, the Crews, Glentoran and Cliftonville, that they had conceded less goals in all the games they had played combined than Linfield had in their opening five games. You can't be getting points when you're conceding 3 points against a bottom six side. So I saw a lot of Blues fans who were frustrated. But let's give a big week. I'm sure it was a tough week for Stuart King. He brings his side off the back of probably the worst result of his managerial career, maybe his career full stop in football. To get a 3-3 in the way they did, that shows character. And it also shows the team that they have when they actually play up to their ability. A massive result.
Yeah, I think there's lots of ways to look at that particular the combination of games. And I thought Stewart was very, very good after the 9-0 defeat in protecting his players. Some managers might have come out and said other things about his players, but he praised them, patted them on the back for everything that they've done for him since he's taken over. And he admitted that he was very, very low, but he was taking the hit.
And he did take the hit. I saw the comments, I saw the sentiment. Carrick fans were furious, it's fair to say. Not only about that result, but about Carrick's start to the season. And I think you're right. He stepped up and he was willing to take it on the chin. And he did. But he answered those critics resolutely.
But then it's a big test. You think we've just lost 9-0 and we're going to play Linfield at Windsor Park. But is that the worst game you could possibly have? Or is that maybe the best game you could possibly have? If you can't go to Linfield and Windsor Park and lift your game, you just get two big nails and you hang your boots up.
They had nothing to lose and they played like it. And they took their chances incredibly well. Cushley broke free from midfield and let rip. You know, you have to have confidence or just pure abandon to go, I'm going to do this. And that's where you take the chances that you're not going to get many of at Windsor Park.
I think for an away team going to like Windsor, and you talk about this all over football, going to the team that's top of the league, why would you bother trying to sit in? Go and play with a bit of freedom, because for starters, it's a big pitch, so you can go and play football on it. But if you sit in, the likelihood is that they're going to pick you off at some stage anyway. So go and play with a bit of freedom and a bit of not wild abandon, you know, because you could get completely steamrolled, as Linfield have done with other teams. And it was probably the worst game that Linfield could have had as well, because you knew there had to be a reaction. There had to be something from Carrick after taking such a heavy defeat, and a defeat which will have really, really hurt. Whether they were wounded and wanted to react. And if the investment story coming out was a distraction at Seaview, it was out of the way by Saturday and they could go and play.
How many Linfield fans leaving Windsor Park are sitting talking to each other going, this is the team that lost 9-0. Yes, they were down to 10 men for whatever. That just adds, you know, more salt to the wound. And for Linfield, I looked at the bench in particular, and this is what I've been talking to some Linfield fans about, is that when I look at the bench, you're seeing Newbury, and they've had a few injuries, yes, but it's Newbury and McBrien and maybe Mulgrew, and outside of that, you haven't got... That's what you think of these Linfield teams, is just... It's not just 1-11, it's 1-18 filled with great Irish League stars. And look, they have a brilliant youth system and young players are peppered throughout teams up and down this league. But for title challengers, they look like they have the thinnest squad so far. And you would imagine going into the next few days and this transfer window closing, that they say they have no cash to spend, but if they could spend some of it, the back line is where they would like to find reinforcements in whatever shape, size or form they come, because it's not working. And perhaps formation plays a part of that, but they're getting caught out a lot. And coaching will also play a big role in that as well, I would imagine.
You lose a player like Jimmy Callagher, you're not just losing a player there, you're losing a big influence. And I remember last year they played Glentoran at Windsor, or quite early on in the season, and the Glens won that night, the Friday night game. Callagher didn't play, Mulgrew didn't play. He had a player sent off in the first half, I can't quite remember exactly who. But I remember watching that game thinking, if Jimmy Callagher and Jamie Mulgrew are playing in that game, that player doesn't get sent off, because they have a word. They calm them down after the first yellow. They tighten things up. So they've lost a big influence in Jimmy, and they haven't quite replaced even the player. So they are a wee bit thin at the back, and they do have a bit of cover in midfield. They do have McKee, Robertson, Fitzpatrick front, and then obviously Miller and Cooper around that. I I do think that Linfield will be very, very actively looking to strengthen before the window closes, or the window will already be closed. There is obviously the free agent market after the window closes. What is available there, I don't know. But I would think David will be very actively trying to still get a couple more bodies in through the door to make sure that they've got enough.
Well, if we're talking about teams that have added bodies, both Cliftonville and Larne have been doing that a fair bit. They've been doing it recently. We saw into that midfield of injuries and departures of Larne. We saw Allen come in from the Scottish League. He started straight away there at Solitude, and he played a role in that goal for Cliftonville, where they took the lead early on. Through a wonderful little curler from Wilson, a player that is very much enticing me recently. His movement and his ability to pick out the goal is something that Cliftonville have rarely been short of, but he's definitely added that extra bit of zip to their team. Now, they're not able to hold on to that lead. It ends 1-1, as a lot of these top six meetings seem to end. But I ask you this, to get that goal back, Larne required a penalty. It came from Micheál Glynn charging into the box. When you saw it firsthand, do you think it was a penalty? Because a lot of people are questioning it. It's one of those ones for me where I think if I was a fan on either side, I would be arguing for my personal view on it. I can see both sides, but I just don't know what decision I would have made there and then in the moment.
I think Micheál Glynn was traveling at a bit of speed. And if you're
He was.
touched when you're traveling at a bit of speed, it knocks you down easier if you're going slow. I think that's quite sort of the natural thing to say. And it was a really good game to watch in sort of the way I was watching it, sort of up and down. And because there was times when it just seemed like it was all Cliftonville. And thinking, they're going to score here, they're going to get a second goal. And then I would watch it for a couple of minutes, and then it was end to end, and it was really exciting. And you're thinking, this really could go either way. So if I'd have watched the 90 minutes, I'm sure it would have been quite entertained. It did look a really, really good game. And the names you mentioned there, we all know how good Joe Gormley's been in this league for a long period of time. Joe the goal. He doesn't get that nickname for no reason. I'm also a big, big fan of Ryan Curran. Then they've signed this guy, Ben Wilson, who, what a signing he's been to add to what they've already got in attack. And then Lauren go and sign Scott Allen. And we've been down this road before with sort of experienced players coming into the league as they've played at a high level. And there's been bad examples, good examples. I go back to when Kenny Irons signed for Linfield. Kenny Irons, Herbert Linfield, because he was a bit like you mentioned earlier, Michael O'Connor. He always seemed to have time to ball, pass it through the eye of the needle. And then you've got the other examples of the likes of Nacho Nwobu, who had never really worked for it at Glenthorne. But I don't think we've ever had a player who's been so recent in a top league like the Scottish Premiership at such a good age at 31, where you think he's still in and around 8 years, Scott Allen. A great pickup for Lorne. Such a great pickup for the Irish League. And that probably a sign of where the Irish League's going as well. Teams are able to pick up these players at that stage of his career.
It's definitely somewhere where Larne like to shop, and they bring him into a midfield which they never really found a replacement for Sule. I imagine many fans will believe he's going to fit into that role, despite the fact that actually Dylan Sloane, as they rate him very highly there, he's actually had a very good start to the season. He's scored a couple of goals in his own right, so he'll be fighting there in that midfield. But for Larne, the one thing I'm sure they'll be screaming at this podcast, Larne fans will be saying that actually a big difficulty for them is injury, something they were very lucky to avoid a lot last season. They haven't really had a 100% fit Cian Bolger for this season at all. Sean Want is crocked. They lose the, well, prolific, a really key player in Andy Ryan. In the middle of that game, they have Wessendorf in there. They still have O'Neill, who hasn't really featured much this season, and he'll be itching to get back into that team. And look, you still have Lee Bonus, who actually isn't able to dispatch his penalty, but then is able to nick it back in on the rebound. I think both teams will likely take this result. They're going to have to. It's happened already. But you'd think that just one little moment here or there could have flicked it into their favour. And it kind of shows really how close these sides are. When you think of Lauren, you think of that opening result where they were flying, and then Dungannon did what we're going to now describe as Dungannon things and score a couple of goals late. Coleraine did not heed the warning. They almost did it against Linfield, but Dungannon Swifts decided that they come alive. 90 minutes is their witching hour, and they become a different team. Coleraine are simply cruising away from home. They were able to get a 2-0 lead, and I've seen a lot of criticisms or questions on the manager, Owen Kearney, that he made three changes, and many feels as though that interrupted their rhythm. But conceding two goals to throw away 2 points, when I think their first goal hit on the 94th minute, criminal feels like an overstatement, but I'm sure if you were a Coleraine fan, that is a gut punch and a half.
Yeah, must be horrendous. You're leading 2-0 so late in a game and you only come away with a point.
But against 10 men as well. A team that you've been playing against with 10 men for 70 minutes. It's just that they this will haunt Coleraine for a long time.
Well, it might if they don't respond this weekend. Yeah, there's got to be a reaction there from the players trying to lift it after that disappointment. And yeah, they play at Linfield, it's maybe not an ideal time if there's a wee bit of a sort of shake in belief there. Linfield's not the team you want to be playing. Yeah, fantastic for Dungannon to be able to stage these comebacks. Rodney will probably be a bit frustrated in that they're not doing that an awful lot earlier in games. I don't know what you do as a manager to try and get them to have that bit of urgency earlier on in the match. You know, maybe it's urgency that is driving these things. But you say Dungannon doing Dungannon things. I wonder, is it Coleraine doing Coleraine things? Because again, when I saw them against Loch Awe, they weren't the same team in the second half as they were in the first. And Oran openly admitted that. He knew that there was going to be some sort of a kick in the second half from Loch Awe after going 2-1 down. But Loch Awe dominated the ball, dominated possession in that second half. Again, albeit Coleraine missed the penalty that would have wrapped it up. Maybe there's something in Coleraine there that they did see it through that night at Loch Awe, but second half performances, they're not just able to completely execute as well as they would like.
It's definitely what I worry about, that the intensity of the Coleraine side and the way they're set up, where they have so many men forward, that they have and are being caught out at the back. It's not exactly true if you really look at the two goals they concede, particularly the second one, which is a bit of indecision in the box very late on, a big old hoof and head down. But for Coleraine, they have this free-flowing style of play, but they haven't really been able to make it consistently. Haven't got the goals that their play suggests that they should. I don't want to say they huffed and puffed against Dungannon, but they were made to work to get their goals. It wasn't really that free-flowing. But as you're absolutely right, Dungannon will try and will want to make this into a 90-minute performance rather than a last-minute smash and grab. What's interesting for Dungannon is that they're already changing things up, despite what many people would say that their season so far has been good, but you know, you've just been unlucky. That's clearly not what McAree's feeling, and he's changing things up. He brings in Morgan in Donets, who's not going to be a full-time player for them due to his commitments in GAA, but he's just worried about getting results when he can and where he can. And as you said, Coleraine are going to go into this weekend, going to try and right the wrong for Dungannon. They'll just try and do what they haven't been able to do fully and take this big triumphant ending to a game and try and turn that into a fully fledged result where they're not relying on this last minute splurge. To peel the curtain back a wee bit, I left it till the very end, and I've left it, and we'll probably talk as this happens here in front of us. Since I was last on this podcast, Crusaders have scored 9 goals in completed games against Newry and against Carrick. They look fantastic. Ben Kennedy being the absolute starlet of this team. But we're looking here now, 90 minutes are on the clock. We'll briefly talk about this Newry game and we'll talk about the result here and whatever happens in front of us, where it's 2-2 and there's been two men sent off for Crusaders and Glentoran. But 4-0 against Newry, they started off strong, Ben Kenny twisting and getting the goal, and they just kept the pressure up. Things haven't exactly gone to plan here at the Oval, and we'll see how it ends up. But this was their first test against top six, but so far they've been able to do something that they weren't able to do last season, and that was take care of business against the bottom six. They've done it with style, and they have been ruthless and relentless. What's impressed you about this Crusaders team to start the season?
Well, I remember speaking to Stephen Baxter after a game last season, and that was around about February, January, February time, and I pointed out to him that they hadn't won 2 games in a row since October, I think, at that stage. Now, whether he was trying to sway the conversation the other way or whether he just wasn't quite aware of it, I don't know, but he didn't really want to get engaged in that particular conversation. But now they are. You know, they've won those 2 games just recently, scoring a lot of goals. You know, 13 goals in 2 games is impressive in anyone's book. They'd only conceded 1 goal before going to the Oval as well. And that goes back to what was said earlier about defences winning the titles. So that Crusaders defence with Jimmy Callagher added to it, albeit now he's injured, that's a big addition for them to then add to the strength that they already had at the back. Getting a player like Ben Kennedy back to full fitness is fantastic for them. They've been absolutely on fire. So they haven't been conceding goals and banging them in at the other end. And it kind of makes you wonder what might have happened last season had Ben Kennedy been fit all the way along. But he's fit now and he's bringing a whole new element to their attack. We know since he came into the league that he's one of the top players. Just got an ability that you don't really see that often in the Irish league.
It's funny, the way I see the Crews being set up is that it's very, they've went to 3 at the back, but it looks as though they've got a more flat 4 in front of them, and then you've got almost like a 1 and a 2 or a 3 where you have Heatley with Leckie up top, and either you're talking about Kennedy being just behind them as like what you might describe as a number 10 or as a bit of an attacking midfielder, and then sometimes they're attacking as a 3 and he might nip out wide and then filter Leckie in. The key thing is that he gets on the ball and he influences games unlike very few players within this league, and he's converting that into goals. He's also swinging in these balls. He scored a corner. Well, he was the man that delivered the corner that where we saw a goal at Newry. He also has pinged in a corner for all those fancy football aficionados who's worrying about assists like me. He is on corners and he's being able to pick out these absolute mammoth men which Baxter's been able to put in together. So this is a team who are experienced. They clearly are willing to score the goals and make it count. And this game against Glentoran, which has got only maybe a minute or so still to go, this was their first big test. They take the lead from a corner, then pinned back by Glentoran. From what I saw, and we'll have to see because it's very close, like I thought they deserved to get a penalty. Well, it looked like it was maybe Leckie that came through on the ball and he was caught, but Raymond Crangle didn't see that as a goal. But then a few minutes later, we go to the other end, and Junior, I would say, from what I saw, was clearly clipped with a high boot. That's a penalty. Glentoran dispatch it, and they look as though they're flying. And then we were both looking at each other confused as we saw more red cards being given out. Bobby Burns sent off for what was time-wasting as he walked to the corner flag and then came back. It's not clear if that what it was for, but it seemed to be time-wasting according to the broadcast. Warren Feeney's then sent off because he's frustrated with that. Crusaders fire men on. They pump it on. On comes Jordan Owens. They keep going for the long ball and then they get it. It's Ross Clark who pings the ball back into the box. And then is it Jordan Owens who finally nips it in? Regardless, it's 2-2. Another draw for these top six teams. A result which Glentoran will feel a lot more frustrated about than the Crews. You talked about Jimmy Calgar being out. He probably, no doubt, was missing at the back. Now, what I missed there is that Crews then lose, I believe, for Scythe. He'll be a player who'll need to be replaced in that team. But no one has a perfect record anymore, right? Sitting at the top of the table after that is Crusaders based on goal difference. I don't know who would have taken that result going into the game. Probably both, maybe. But I feel like Glentoran will be very, very frustrated and will be talking about their circumstances around that Bobby Burns' second yellow card, I imagine, over the next few days. But these are some of the growing pains of these rules that are being enforced at the start of the season. I imagine players like this will not do something similar in the future, knowing that this is potentially one of the outcomes.
Yeah, I've seen the incident with Bobby Burns there, and he does go over as if he's going to take the corner and then turns away again for someone else to come. I really don't think you're going to get away with that the way things are now with the rules. It looks like, you know, you can read into that, and that is a blatant attempt to waste a bit of time. The way things are being cracked down on, referees are going to give out cards for that. Players will learn, and they'll probably learn the hard way.
Oh, I think I would be absolutely, to put myself in a Glentoran fan's shoes right now, I would be furious. But it's like the first time a player scores a goal and takes his shirt off and it's a second yellow, we'll not forget it. And what we'll now not need to see, but fans will be calling for this now, going, he walked back and forward, time, you know, we'll all be calling for time wasting now. But look, it's a directive, players will learn, the game will change. But that's a tough pill to swallow.
Players just need to be a bit more sensible and not try and push the referee's buttons. Just looking at it again, Bobby Burns is walking over really, really slowly. He gets to within 12 yards of the ball and then walks away again. The way that he's walking even towards it initially, is a little bit silly, and then he turns and walks away. Probably last season, nobody would have batted an eyelid to that, but it's going to get picked up on. A lot of these things that are coming out now, even at the start of this season, that I don't really like. Yes, managers do have to conduct themselves a little bit better on lines. I think David Healy's already got 3 yellow cards himself, and we're only 5 games in.
5, and you're gone. That, like, we are going to see that on the regular. You'll be surprised if a manager doesn't just by accumulate these 5 red cards. But we are just going to have to get used to this. The one thing looking at this game, just compared to last season, I know fans sometimes look at where we won and where we didn't win, trying to recreate results from last season. Similarly, earlier on in the season last year, this was a game where Glentoran won. If you're looking at it from a Crusaders fan point of view, this is a point earned, and a big point earned now for them, where they were looking potentially at the first time they've conceded more than one goal in a game, ruining or putting a blight onto this great run. They'll feel very good coming out of this. I don't think they were completely battered. They had their chances and played well, particularly in the first half. But I also thought Glentoran played particularly well. But sticking with Crusaders, great result for them with all the context involved.
I think Crusaders would be delighted taking a point away from the Oval. Like you say, they lost their this time last year. Any team that takes a point away from the Oval this season would be quite happy. The flip side of that is Glentoran have now played Crusaders and Larne, both at home, and only taken 1 point. It might be something that further down the line hurts them a little bit, so they'll be looking to try and turn those results around when they're playing the top 6 teams. But if you'd have asked Stephen Baxter that after 5 games, he's won the first 4 and taken a point in the 2-2 draw at the Oval, irrespective of whether they were playing against 10 men towards the end, I think he would be very, very happy with that.
We shift to the news. The big bit of news which came out just as I was about to publish last week's podcast. Carrick have a new, and I'm going to use the phraseology that I'll be giving the words, a new majority stakeholder, a man called Michael Smith, which is a very Carrick Fergus or Carrick Rangers name to join that crew. He is an American gentleman. He is from Memphis, I believe. Or there was a bit of an interview I watched. He talked about his love and Dez playing football for like the Memphis Steam or something like that. There's going to be investment in the club. How much, we don't know. But really what he's supposed to be bringing to this club is a bit of expertise, talking about new revenue streams, talking about advertising and things like that. So it's not simply a case where he's going to come in and throw bucket loads a la Kenny Bruce, but I'm sure this is a chance to maybe bring in other investors. It's really not clear, to be fair. Carrick fans will be praying and hoping that this is a real positive sign for what's to come in the future, and that they can be able to maybe start progress up the league with his help, with whatever revenue streams he is going to add. His previous history is working with Estee Lauder, working with Nike in various forms. Again, I can't really stand up any of those suggestions or claims. That's other people reporting that. If you're a Carrick fan, you're looking at this as only positives. But from an outsider's point of view, there is a lot of questions where you could potentially be concerned. Feels a bit over the top. I just think there's a lot to see with this situation than there is real certainties of what's going to happen. But I guess that's the story with any real... Are we calling this a takeover? Majority stakeholder?
I don't think it's a takeover as such. I would look upon it more as an investment in the club. I don't know if it's just a Northern Ireland thing, but we're just cynical and sceptical about these type of people coming into the Irish League, or if that's across football. But yeah, there's probably a lot of people going, oh, this won't work. You know, Carrick, you know, it wouldn't matter how much money you put in. I'm just looking forward to Stuart King getting his, you know, his package from Estee Lauder delivered, seeing how that goes.
Well, we'll be doing the post-matches, so we'll know if he's smelling a lot nicer. Not that he's got a particular scent at the minute, but, you know, if we're starting to smell a bit of elderflower mixed with peaches, then man's got hooked up, you know.
Yeah, I suppose if you look, trying to take the optimistic view of it, any money, any investment coming into the Irish League can and should only be a good thing. You look at what's happened at Lorne and at Glentoran, it's forced other clubs to raise their standards. It's forced other clubs to push the bar and to try and keep pace. I think there's big potential at Coleraine. If they do have a big backer, they are already one of the most well-supported clubs in the country. Their home gates are fantastic. I think they've got the potential to pull in support from right across that area, which I do think is the case at other clubs as well. Carrick's maybe a little bit different in that their fan base is smaller, and how much is a fan base at Carrick going to grow, just given the location?
It's if you expand out from Carrick, you hit Lorne. Isn't that the funny thing about it, you know?
Yeah, that's what I mean. And then a lot further down the road, you've Crusaders. So I would say even if you expand that out, the wider area, you're probably going to get fans of other clubs already in that area. And there's maybe a lot of people sort of migrated out from Belfast to Carrick that would maybe support the Belfast clubs too. So that could be a thing, even that if they do get some investment then, well, they have got the investment then, there might be a ceiling there as to what Carrick can achieve. But they've done very well at a time, I think it was two or three games to go last season, they were still in the chance of seventh place in the European playoff. Don't see that being built on hugely in the short term, but they've signed very well this summer, and with a few more in there, you just never know. It might become an attractive place. It might become a place where they can offer good wages and good terms to players. Whether they have the ability to go full-time at some stage remains to be seen. But that seems to be the next step of the natural progression that the clubs want to try to make. Cliftonville have brought in Jim Magilton with the idea of sort of semi-full-time, similar to the Crusaders, and that would suggest that they want to sort of go that way first and then go fully full-time. And I think that's been the thinking of Cliftonville for a while. People at Coleraine have talked about them going full-time, and yeah, if they get some money in, that's obviously going to be the next step.
Well, this is really key because just as we talk, Friends of Corain have backed, they've voted in favour of this investment. What that means, and if that is the final key or that's the final tick, I'm not really across. It's not really clear. So I just don't want to jump in and say they've got it. They're involved. The reports are going into tonight's meeting was that this was one of the big hurdles and that it was the people looking after the club, the Friends of Corain, they were the ones. I think a good thing, if people want to expand beyond this, I had Damian Mullen from the Corain Chronicle on this podcast just 2 weeks ago talking about that. You'll be able to see that on the feed there. Troubles up top. You'll be able to see him getting into a bit further. That was before it was confirmed. He felt as though it was going to go forward. And I don't want to be negative on either of these two decisions that have been made, but I think I should echo some of dissent seems over the top. But look, we have seen particularly in the English League, lower down, you know, people talk about the Mike Ashleys, but you're looking further down and like the Oyston family at Blackpool, you've had owners of Leighton Orient who've had a lot of frustration, brought that club down, or there were fans were unhappy with their management of it. We talk about the Buries and the Macclesfields, you know, clubs that pretty much had to start all over again. That's not counting what some people would have trouble with in regards to the people that took Wimbledon up to Milton Keynes. So a new owner is scary. But look, we've seen Ali Poor come in and change Glentoran. We've seen Kenny Bruce come in and revolutionise Lorne and bring them their very first league title. We don't know what we don't know, but with both of these two decisions, we are jumping into the unknown. Anything new, anything fresh, it's exciting, but it can be scary. And honestly, I have every single fingers and toes crossed that we only have owners that bring stability and investments to clubs and to local areas. And I'm sure it's going to be an exciting few weeks and months now for fans of both those clubs. Another thing to celebrate for Corain, I'm sure you'll feel pride in this if you're a Corain supporter. We'll touch on it very briefly. Michael O'Neill announced a squad for the games against Slovenia and Kazakhstan in September. We've saw a lot of players coming back into the fold who have been out for a decent amount of time. Paul Smith's come in. I think a lot of Northern Ireland fans have been calling for him to return. He's started the season back with QPR very well. He was excellent the previous season, and that's what got him the move. Conor McMenamin's still in after starting pretty much every game for St Mirren. He hasn't dropped off. Lee Bonus has, but look, we've got the likes of Washington, McGuinness. But looking at this Northern Ireland squad, we have Johnny Evans in, even though he hasn't got a team. We've got Craig Cathcart in, who hasn't got a team. But Brad Lyons, that's the player I wanted to get to, has started really well with Kilmarnock. I think every Irish League fan is delighted that when we see players like Trey Hume, now Brad Lyons, Conor McMenamin, as players in that squad after plying their trade in the Irish League. We all want them to become Stuart Dallas. Gavin White's in there as well.
I think we loved it at the Euros when we had the team from 2016 with Gareth McCauley, Stuart Dallas in it, you know, who'd come from the Irish League to get to that stage. It was brilliant as an Irish League fan, no matter who you supported, that these guys had come through your league and we're now playing on the biggest stage with Northern Ireland, and you know, the first time we qualified in 30 years. And yeah, it's great to see Brad Lyons making it that far, because he's gone over there and he's had to push himself, he's had to be patient, he's had to gone to Blackburn and he's gone out on loan, and there's times when you wondered was he going to come home and not having maybe made the impact across the water that he has. But it just goes to show you, when you're from Northern Ireland, if you have a short spell of good form, you'll get in the international squad. I mean, we're a small country with a small pool of players. Brad has never ever been capped at any other level before. So he's done well at the start of this season, and that will catch the manager's eye, because like I say, we do have a small pool of players, and we have got an even smaller pool of players at the minute than we've ever had. I think we haven't had a player play a single minute in the Premier League in England this season yet.
One thing that's just a big concern.
That's a concern. Even our players in the Championship aren't particularly high up the Championship. So we're really dipping into the League One for the bulk of our squad and the bulk of our starters. And that's not a good position to be in international football. Michael probably is quite concerned, maybe without saying it publicly. It's the hand that he's dealt, you know, maybe the toughest hand that a Northern Ireland manager's been dealt in quite a while. But Michael's clever and he'll work out a way of getting a good solid 11 out onto the pitch. This is a young squad, it's still evolving. And we're hoping that these young lads here at Premier League academies will come through in the next wee while. Obviously, Shea Charles is different from that in that he has been starting games at international level and doesn't look out of place. He's going to be around for a long time. Paul Smith, similar to Brad, and he's an ex-Irish League player. It's gone over. Paul's been a bit up and down. He's gone back to QPR where he first started when he went to England. And Paul's an exciting player to watch. Pace, skill, and if he can get back into the Northern Ireland team and do what he did when he made his debut against South Korea, we'll all be delighted.
It would be brilliant if he could recapture that lightning in the bottle and establish himself in that team the same way Shea Charles has. What a key player he will be. I think we're all pinning our hopes on him for the next decade or so. And we'll see if Brad Lyons gets to kick a football of an international game over the next month or so. But we'll go to this weekend's games. We'll look ahead of them. We'll rip through them all here. Corian host Linfield. They're both missing some players at the back for this. Linfield, Finlayson, will he be a determinator for this game? Are you feeling strongly one way or the other in these games? Corian, I've stood back and pretty much tried to put the game to bed the same way they did with Lorne and try and snap them on the counter. Will Shevlin be back? It doesn't look likely that he is close to a comeback just yet with this issue with his foot or his ankle. They would love to have him back for this game here. Perhaps what a way to finish off this week, voting in favour of the takeover, getting a result at home against Linfield. That'll be some steam, eh?
Yeah, they probably hope that the optimism is building already at Corian and that they're thinking that these millions are going to come in. And did they say they're targeting the league title by 2028?
Well, they need to start winning these top six games or they can forget about it.
They will, they'll have to. But the Corian Linfield games are always fantastic. There's always talking points in them. There's always things happening. I do remember a couple of maybe penalty incidents or red card incidents over the years in these games, even in recent times in David Healy's time. Linfield love going up the Corian because there's always a really good atmosphere and they're always feisty enough games. But you mentioned Shevlin. Player like that's a big loss. And we talk about Glenavon losing their top scorer in Fitzpatrick. Effectively, Corian at the minute anyway have lost their top goal scorer from last season, top goal scorer in the league, and it's difficult to replace that. You know, Andy Mitchell went in and he scored against Loughall that night. He's not in that same category as Shevlin, who's just delivered week in, week out last season, and without him, it does blunt you big time. You know, they've only scored six goals in five games. That tells you all you need to know about how much they're missing him.
Are you going to stick your neck on the line here? I have to admit, I think this is going to be a tight 1-1, but that's just because I'm preconditioned to where these are going. But I've seen Joel Cooper influence the game massively, and no doubt Oran will look for a big reaction from his Bansiders team. So I think a goal each and perhaps a more entertaining game than we've seen in previous times.
Yeah, I think Corian at home are difficult to beat now and are difficult to break down. And you talk about Linfield conceding goals, you know, conceding more goals than anyone in the top seven even. So yeah, you could see it being a game where maybe both teams are scoring, both teams are conceding. So yeah, I'm sort of contradicting myself a little bit in terms of Corian's, you know, lack of goals, but I can see them being able to score against Linfield given their problems in keeping clean sheets. So you're going 1-1. I think I might go maybe a wee bit more high scoring than that and maybe a 2-2.
Big games come thick and fast at the Oval where Cliftonville come to town. This is a fixture which feels like it was in the favour of Cliftonville last year. Glentoran are going to be without Bobby Burns. They'll be looking to snap right back into getting a win here. They'll have a fire in their belly after that, their outing against Crusaders this evening. Clifton equally will feel as though that they're disappointed by that result against Linfield, and they'll want to get a win on the board here. Similar to the other one, do they just cancel each other out? If there's going to be a high-scoring game out of those, this game and the previous game we talked about, this feels like the one, but I just don't know. It's hard for me to pick out a winner here. I can see either side doing the business. If I'm going to stick my neck on the line, I think I'm going to back Glentoran just for being at home and just the way that Donnelly and O'Connor and Junior seem to be finding more of a fluid cadence up top.
I think I might go the other way because, like we said earlier, Glentoran's inability to win these games at home against the top six. Like I say, they've taken 1 point out of six against Lauren and Crusaders already this season. And I remember watching that Sky game, the Sunday game against Cliftonville at the Oval last season, and Cliftonville were superb. And they're playing good football. They're scoring goals, they're not conceding many. And yeah, I think they can go to the Oval on a big pitch, play some good football and create chances. And like we said earlier on about Ben Wilson, he's scoring goals. I think I could see Cliftonville nicking this one.
And I'm impressed by Cliftonville. Honestly, Turner looks like a revelation on this kind of wide of whatever defensive formation they play. He's linking up really well with Stewart, who's come in, and Levi Ives, who, you know, there's another player that Lauren are without at the minute. And I'm the one that's been the big Cliftonville doubter. I've been won over to a certain extent by what I've seen on the pitch. So if Cliftonville win that, I'm sure many Reds fans will enjoy their chance to poke fun and laugh at me. One of the big games of the weekend, Glenavon against Ballymena. I will be there at Mournview Park. I've been to quite a few of these matchups over the past season or so. And I mean, this always delivers drama, action, and usually goals. I would love all three of them on Saturday. Both teams are desperate for any kind of result, but most importantly, they'll be keen not to give their other team an advantage, because whoever wins this, it'll feel like a big mega swing even this early in the season. Usually that says to me that it's going to be a bit of a tepid, it's going to be a bit of a tough game to get going. I would love an early goal. Can you see it?
I could. Because I can see Glenavon looking at Ballymena going, they're wounded. They'll be coming here maybe a wee bit uncertain, a wee bit nervy that, you know, another defeat could be costly to them. And I could see Glenavon thinking, we throw the kitchen sink at them here early and really, really scare them, and we get a goal up, and it maybe plays on that nervousness and the fact that they're still haven't got a point on the board this season.
I think this is almost tougher for Glenavon because they are at home and they are under pressure from their fans. Their fans will be expecting some sort of result here. And if it isn't exactly going their way, I actually think as the game goes on, or I think this is one of those games where Glenavon will come in, get the result, and get out of there. Because even if it's 2-0, I think, and Ballymena are starting to find themselves a bit more, the aura in that ground, I think the tension will be palpable for sure. I really genuinely cannot call this. I think they're going to cancel each other out potentially and it'll be 0-0, but I don't know if that helps anybody in that situation.
I think you used the right word. Expectation will be on Glenavon being at home and, you know, having picked up that point with a good second half performance against Loch Awe. The fans will be expecting them to win this, given that Ballymena are bottom without a point as well. So yeah, does that come with pressure, or is that pressure a good thing? We shall see.
We will have to see. Loch Awe will be free as a bird going into Seaview. It would be truly one of the big shocks of not only this season, but of the past few seasons, if Loch Awe was to get 3 points. I think it would take a brave man to stick any kind of coin on that. But the way Loch Awe have been playing, Crusaders having their first bump in the road, having played on Tuesday, Loch Awe are quite open. It feels as though they're not the type of team to go to Seaview. No one's getting results at Seaview. I always say that here over the past season and a half. But Loch Awe, are you encouraging them? Get out there, boys. Fire up your wing backs and just take it to this Crusaders team.
I can actually see this one being a really entertaining game.
I agree.
Because Loch Awe do play some good football, albeit in the games I've seen. They play really good football into the final third, and they just don't have that sort of step up in quality and standard. In the final third, the other teams that have been in the Premiership for a lot longer have scored goals, and they're fairly tight at the back. Ben Murdoch's stepped up from what I've seen into the Premiership seamlessly. He's a really good defender, really good leader. So I can see them going to Seaview and enjoying the surface. It's a true surface, a good surface to play football on, and they are a good footballing team. I think they'll take it to the Crews, but we know then that going the other way, that lightning quick attack that the Crews have, they can break on you, they can 1-2 passes and they're through, be it Heatley being on the end of it or him being the creator. But yeah, that I think that could be a really, really good game there. Yeah, it could be a few goals.
I'm going to go 3-1 Crusaders here, just because I think Loughall maybe will make it scary. They might get a penalty, but I think Crusaders will, over 90 minutes, they'll have their chances, and I think they'll put them away. Newry, go to Larne. Hopefully a bit of home comforts for Larne after a bumpy away game at Solitude. Do you look at Newry? Like, if Newry can get an early goal, if Lorcan Ford can do what he did against Carrick, he did against Glenavon, and sucker punch them, will Larne panic? They always look so calm and assured on that Inver Park pitch. Maybe there's a chance for a shock here. I maybe can't see it just with it being at Inver Park, but Larne will want to get a reaction, get a win on the board, and try and not fall into a potential funk that anything but 3 points would put them into.
Yeah, somehow Newry like playing away from home, though. That's where they've picked up their points, away to Carrick and away to Glenavon.
They do.
And they play nice football. They've got, like I say, Lorcan Ford. He makes a difference. And that was a really good goal he scored against Glenavon. Yeah, Larne at home, that's why they won the league last season. It was a fortress. But I think they're learning very quickly that it's one thing to win the league and retain it. It's very different. Which is why it's not done very often. You know, not many teams have retained league titles. I mean, you have to go back to the 60s since Glentoran did it. So they're finding it tough. But yeah, you would expect, if they're going to be serious about retaining the title, they've got to be looking at putting Newry away, down at Inver. They wouldn't be accepting anything less really than 3 points from this one. But Newry is quite strong at the back. That day against Glenavon, Barney McKeown was outstanding. And having seen Barney when he came back into the Portadown team the second half of last season, he was up there in terms of player of the year for Portadown. And I've always liked big Andrew Martin beside him. He's just a big, steady defender. They'll relish the battle against Lee Bonus. We know what he's like. He just loves a fight, I suppose is maybe a word we could use to describe it, a good battle against a centre-half, given how he likes the physical nature of the game. So that could be interesting, but you got to expect Larne to be taking the points there.
We'll wrap this up, and we'll wrap the podcast up here with a final preview. Carrick host Dungannon. Mr. Smith, no doubt, will be in attendance. A bit of Friday night fun. It's on the streamed game as well. Interesting one. Carrick will feel good about getting the result against Linfield. Dungannon equally will feel good about coming back at home, but this is away from home. Could they cancel each other out here? I would love for this to be an exciting goals at either end, but I would say that Dungannon low-key are a very physical team now, when I don't think they were this time last season. Carrick Rangers are... Look, they've been up and down. Every single game it's been, we're up and then we're down, then we lose, then we react. And I could see maybe Dungannon getting a goal or two and Carrick Rangers unable to bring themselves into the game. My gut says maybe go for Carrick here, or maybe just draw. But actually, I think this is maybe Dungannon's result here. I think they're going to take this 2-0.
From memory, is Dungannon away to Carrick one of those games where there's always a lot of goals in?
You've scud this game now, Mr. McKinley, just saying that.
Much as Dungannon like to get the ball down and play a bit of football, which that sometimes that pitch of Carrick doesn't lend itself to, place where they like to go. I think any manager, all they want is consistency, and Carrick haven't had that so far. You know, it's loss, win, loss, loss, draw. They'd like to put a couple of results together. Dungannon, like we've seen, they like to come from behind to take their points. Yeah, so if Carrick go 2-0 up, you're probably making Dungannon a favourite.
Feels like it. If I think if it's 1-0 Carrick with like 8 seconds to go, it's all and there's a big punt up from Dungannon. Hold on to your horses, because we just don't know what could happen. So yeah, and you know what? That's a big enough battle down there. You know, Carrick are considered somewhat above the other patch down below at the bottom, but they can easily be scraping away there from now until the end of the season. And I think Dungannon will want to be in exactly the same position that Carrick are in, where they are got a bit of distance between them and the teams below them. My final question before I say tally-ho to your fine self. You follow Glavin a fair bit, you follow Loughall for a bit. I'm sure you watched a lot of Portadown last season. From your time watching some of these teams near the bottom of the league, is there a team across the bottom six which you may be fearful of if you were a fan in regards to potentially being this year's Portadown? Maybe no one's going to be of that ilk, but some team has to be relegated from this division unless, I don't know, shenanigans. But is there a team right now where you're thinking they would be who I'd be worried about going down at this stage of the season?
You compared earlier on Ballymena's start to Portadown's last season in terms of the fixtures and the outcomes, and very, very fair comparison, very much similar. I mean, you've gone 5 games at the start of the season and you've only scored 2 goals. You've got to start worrying about where your points are going to come from, and because if you're not scoring goals, you're not going to pick up many points. You've got to try and keep clean sheets. Yeah, it's probably if you take a DeLorean back 12 months, you're probably using these same quotes and same lines about Portadown at that stage. It's starting to look difficult for Ballymena, but that's why the game on Saturday against Glenavon is massive then for both. And they're probably looking at the Carrick Dungannon game, thinking, well, if that's a draw, then whoever comes out winners, if there's a winner at Glenavon on Saturday, is probably really happy that they've then tightened that gap and moved a little bit away from the bottom. I'm not saying that whoever loses at Moranby on Saturday is going to be relegated, but if you're sitting at 6 games into the season, or Ballymena potentially with no points, Glenavon potentially with only one, you do start to get concerned. You know, nobody wins anything or loses anything 6 games into the season, but you do start to see a pattern emerging quite early on.
Well, I appreciate your assessment and your honesty. There's plenty of season still to go, so we'll just have to see. But, Stuart, as debuts go, this was Rooney against Arsenal-esque. It was sterling, it was exciting, and it had all the frills that...
Was it Healy against Luxembourg?
It had all the action that I hopefully promised to people at the very start of the podcast. A big one, but it was a fun one. Thank you so much for joining me. If people go, I want to know more about what this man does online, is there a way where they can follow you?
Yeah, you can check out my Twitter, Stuart D. McKinley, and all my stuff on the Telegraph website, be it the Irish League Premiership, be it the Women's Premiership. Covering all that, and it's building up to be a exciting title race with 5 games to go. There's so much happening at the end of the women's season as well, with Irish Cup semi-finals coming up, Cliftonville playing Benfica in the Champions League next week as well, so there's lots going on.
Amazing. Stuart, it's been a delight. I look forward to chatting to you again sometime soon. All the best. Cheerio, man.
Thanks for having me. All the best.
I always say it's a bit different this week on the podcast, but genuinely, this week was a wee bit different. I've never done the podcast reviewing all the games with one eye poking its way at a game that was happening as we spoke. You know, I want to give you the most up-to-date reaction to the games, to the stories that happened, and my goodness, was this week a prime example of that. I think I must have reviewed that game, what, like 30 seconds, 2 minutes after it happened? Why? Because I am here to deliver. On top of that, we had the news about Coleraine breaking as I was doing the podcast. Hey, it was fun. It's different. I roll with the punches. So yes, that was all good this week. I'm really looking forward to next week as it's going to be Kicking Match 50. Yes, 49 episodes in the bag. One more to go until 50. If you've been here from the very start, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. If you're only been here the past few weeks, hey, it's all good. I appreciate your love. There's plenty of new people that have joined me this season, and it's really lovely to have you. So thank you very much. I want to do a big shout out to the Flynets boys. I know Mark and Owen, they said that they're going to hang it up for now. They're going to stop the podcast for a while. I'm saying it's for a while because we all want them to come back. So I just want to pay tribute to them. Those guys started their podcast pretty much at the same time as when I did. And it was just great to have, I hope, each other spurring each other on. And look, it was great to have Mark on the podcast earlier on. No doubt I'll have Mark on the podcast sometime in the future. And like I said on Twitter, those guys knew exactly what it was all about. It was all about strong opinions and focusing on the fans. And that's why I know so many of you listen to this podcast listen to theirs as well, and they will be a big miss. And I know the Waffle are taking a break as well, so if you're here, I will be here covering Irish League. But you know, it's always good when there's more voices chatting about Irish League stuff. So if you want to follow me, you can do that on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. It's just Kicking Match is the username. If you want to ask your smart speaker to say, hey smart speaker, please play Kicking Match on Irish League podcast. And until then, until Kicking Match 50, see you then. Toodaloo. Enjoy your football. Cheers.